So Catherine, let's get rolling. In light, let's just dive right in and ask. I'm going to ask you to start off by telling us a little bit about how you've been thinking about girls and women's empowerment at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Thank you, Sebastian. Good morning, good evening in India to everyone. I'm really excited about the panel today because we're taking a very complex issue and phenomena and trying to unpack it a little bit, empowerment, and really think about what does it mean and how does it show up in programs and how does it sort of intersect and influence outcomes of programs as well as being an outcome itself. So I think this is going to be a really interesting discussion. We have seen over time some progress in terms of improving gender equality in the last few decades, but we still see huge barriers remaining, and it's going to take us hundreds of years to close those gaps at the current pace of change. And so it's really important for us to be trying to understand what those barriers are and to try to really unpack these ingrained, complex barriers where we see the products of those barriers and we see the artifacts and we see how it's manifested, but we don't understand as deeply as we need to how they're perpetuated over time. And so one of the newest strategies at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is actually our gender equality strategy. It's only a few years old. And when we started building it out, we knew that we wanted empowerment of women and girls to really be at the heart of everything we were doing. We knew, and we had evidence from different programs, that approaches that took empowerment at the core, were better at getting some of the other outcomes, health and other outcomes that we wanted to see. But also we knew that without those changes, we would not be able to close the gaps. But at the same time, we didn't have great and detailed evidence on the nature of empowerment and how it was related to those outcomes. So we wanted to both put empowerment at the heart of what we do, but we also wanted to be clear about what that meant. And we wanted to be able to also assess and evaluate it. So I'm going to share the model that we developed when we wanted to get more clear ourselves. And we certainly didn't reinvent the concept of empowerment, but what we wanted to do was really draw on decades of thought and learning by academics, activists, implementers, women and girls in the countries that we worked in. Many of our partners had been applying these concepts to their work for a long time. And so we really wanted to look at what was there and understand it and distill it in a way that we could then apply it meaningfully and not simply say empowerment is at the heart of everything we do, but really know what that meant and to be able to also hold ourselves accountable to tracking that and assessing that and understanding that. And we worked with one of our partners, the Royal Tropical Institute in the Netherlands, to pull that into a framing. And so if everybody will permit me, I'll just walk us through that framing. And this isn't going to be sort of a lecture conversation throughout, but just to kind of tee us up so that we are being specific when we're talking about empowerment and trying to have a bit of a common language as we talk about that for the rest of the session. So I'm just going to share my screen, and I hope that you can see that. And so I'm going to assume you can, or somebody would alert me. So I just want to start first with a definition. We define empowerment as the expansion of choice and strengthening of voice through the transformation of power relations so that women and girls have more control over their lives and future. Empowerment is a process of ongoing change, but it's also an outcome of women and girls having greater influence and control over their own lives and future. So I'm going to quickly go through the components. Agency is at the heart of our model, and agency refers to the capacity of women and girls to take action and pursue goals free from the threat of violence or retribution. So you can see if you are looking for agency, you're going to see different things. So some of the ways we might see agency expressed include decision-making, leadership, and collective action. For example, women and girls express agency when they influence and make decisions and when they establish and act on their goals. Leadership can be a really powerful expression of agency. For example, when we see women and girls leading and inspiring social change. And very pertinent to today's session, I think, agency can also be expressed collectively. Women and girls engage in collective action when they stand together in solidarity to transform institutions and power relations. I want to talk about the next piece of the model now, the institutional structures. So our model locates institutional structures in the spaces where women and girls live their lives, the family, community, the market, and the state. In each of these spaces, institutional arrangements are shaped by formal laws, but also by norms and relationships among groups and individuals. Now, building out the resources side of the model, we often think about resources as tangible assets. Like we heard in the SHG member at the very beginning of the presentation, we heard about finance, for example. Resources, though, can also be knowledge, they can be time. For example, right now, very pertinent in the pandemic we're going through, on average, women and girls around the globe spend more than twice as much time on unpaid care and domestic work as men do. And those numbers are much higher in India, where I know we have a lot of people joining us for this webinar. Resources also include social capital, like relationships and social networks, which in turn can contribute to strengthening critical consciousness and shaping collective action. And resources also include bodily integrity, which means a woman or girl having control over her physical and mental well-being. And I want to talk a little bit, finally, a bit more about that about critical consciousness, because in some ways, I think it's often one of the most ignored components, especially when we're looking at evaluations and models. But I think it's one of the most key. And critical consciousness is when women and girls identify and question how inequalities and power operate in their lives and affirm their sense of self and their rights. And so we see as women or girls gain critical consciousness, their aspirations, their sense of self-awareness, their confidence, their self-esteem, and self-efficacy can grow. And so if we look at all of these pieces together, so what? How does empowerment occur, if one can put it so bluntly? So very simply, and it's not simple, of course, and it's very challenging to measure, but women and girls experience empowerment when their inner change connects with shifts in institutional structures and systems, and bringing about transformation of power relations at both the individual and the social levels. So basically, when we talk about in the development sector, when we throw around, that this is empowering, or we have an empowerment approach, or working on women's economic empowerment, we need to ask ourselves, is this work transforming consciousness and structures in order to really be true to what that means? Looking across these different components or elements, they all interact, which again makes it very complex. This is not linear. So from an evaluation point of view, this is quite complex to unpack, especially empirically. But changes across all of these elements interact. So changes in agency, institutional structures, and resources can be mutually reinforcing. For example, women who participate in collective action and successfully, for example, get access to a public works program. So a woman joins a group, they collectively act together, they get access to a government program that may unlock access to productive resources, which may in turn give them more power and influence and decision making within their household. But conversely, constraints in one dimension or one set of elements can be a barrier. For example, efforts to increase women's decision-making power within her household may be unsuccessful if norms in the community perpetuate and continue the expectation that women not say speak up in their own homes. So that's really what I wanted to introduce just to give us some grounding when we talk about empowerment in terms of what are the components that we're trying to act on or change and what are we seeing change. The model really is just a tool. We can use it in a range of ways. We're using it in a range of ways at the foundation. We can use it to consider how policies and programs, including in the current COVID context, may be experienced by women and girls differently, and also by different women and girls. There's an intersectional element to this model. I won't go into that in detail, just for time constraints, but it is there. We can use this to ensure that women and girls' voices are prioritized in shaping the programs and policies that affect their lives. We can use it to anticipate and monitor unintended consequences that may rise from, for example, challenging existing power structures. And we can use it, I think pertinent to today's conversation in particular, to measure progress in programs and try to capture and understand the dynamics of change across these different elements. So I really just wanted to introduce this to give us maybe hopefully a bit of a starting point as we start diving in to programs and to work that are meant to be empowering, to really start with a bit of a framing on empowerment and ask ourselves, use that to sort of ask ourselves whether these programs that we're going to be talking about today or work include, you know, these elements, are changing those elements, are they truly empowering, and also how do we encourage and foster sort of those deeper change processes. So I'm going to stop there, Sebastian, and hopefully that gives us a bit of a grounding to kick off the rest of the session. Thank you.